Move to the next case of the morning, which is the Ardian Ethanod versus John Ashcroft. Mr. Kulik.
Good morning, Your Honors. Richard Kulik is appearing on behalf of the petitioner Ardian Hassani. This case, like the prior one, comes to you because of a decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals, pursuant to a decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals, a decision by the immigration judge where the hearing was originally held on July 1st, 1998.
Tell us how you think the decision in NEAM would alter the outcome in this case, please.
Well, this case has an assumption by the immigration judge that he somehow came up with this concept that he knows what the average Albanian is confronted with. He apparently arrived at that concept through a perusal of, I don't believe the country report, I believe it was State Department profile for that year. In that regard, his concept is based on flawed logic, and I think that there was ample material in this case supplied by the petitioner that rebutted the conclusions that the immigration judge derived from that profile of country conditions. For example, there are personal statements from Democratic Party luminaries, one of whom has become a cause celebre, Azem Haidari. That was the Exhibit 5, it's Record Excerpt 180, 250, 253, 269, where he indicates attempts were made on him to assassinate him, attempts to kidnap his son, those various situations, which draw a totally different picture of what was going on politically in Albania during the time that this case was under consideration. It's interesting in this case that the immigration judge found the petitioner to be credible. And then after finding him credible, he went on to ask for corroboration or for corroborative materials. That's not required. And if you believe him, his testimony indicates that the facts of the case. The immigration judge did not go into a total, at least conventional, analysis of past persecution and future persecution. He misconstrued the significance and the impact of petitioner's presence in Yugoslavia for a temporary period of time. He did not allow the respondent to testify as to his information about current country conditions in Albania, yet he questioned him on that. In particular, he questioned him as he would an expert in regard to whether certain things mentioned in the country reports were historically accurate. He denied a motion that was a motion proposed by the attorney for the petitioner for a continuance, and we feel that was an abuse of discretion. The most significant part of the case in regard to the factual scenario was an event that was described by the petitioner where he was surrounded by four or five men with hoods who'd pointed rifles at his head and had, according to his testimony, appeared almost performing a mock assassination. One of those individuals dissuaded the rest from shooting him. The judge characterized this event as four or five men with hoods pointing a gun at his head. Also,
does it matter who they were?
Well, it matters who they were in the context of the times, I believe, Your Honor, and I think that the country reports confirm and the materials confirm there was such a politically charged atmosphere at the time that it matters in that the threats that were made to him concurrently with that mock assassination were politically charged.
And somebody that represents some form of government or some movement or something that is not being controlled by the government. It can't just be a bunch of thugs.
Right.
It can't be criminals or just some roaming band of gunmen. Apparently there are a lot of guns and a lot of, not a very nice place to live, period. I guess that's where it gets in the average Albanian, which is a little unusual, but it's not very good for anybody.
Yeah, I think it says that. And one of the interesting things about it was that I think the government pointed out in its brief that there were these types of human rights violations on all sides.
Yeah.
However, one of those sides became the government, and the other side lost. And the proponents of the political view of the other side started piecemeal to flee the country, and I don't believe this is the first case you ever had from there like that. Part of that, the judge didn't even mention as far as I know, the petitioner's car being burned, his cousin being killed. Those all adding up to the subjective view of the respondent that he was under threat there. There were actual threats, there were actual moves made in order to carry out those threats, and there were people associated with him that actually had been subjected to the realization of those threats. This concept of the average Albanian, I don't know where it certainly wasn't in the proofs. It's certainly not one of those categories of judicial notice which the courts normally are take notice of. It's not an almanac fact. It's not something that everybody knows about and is common knowledge. It's not some scientific methodology. It's just something that he came up with at the time. And I think it's reflective of judicial mentality in this case with this particular judge that indicates that he's not really inclined to decide the case that's before him in the traditional sense that we see a judge objectively decide a case. I think the language that we pointed out in the brief as to where the judge jumps in on the examination of the client, and he asks him these prejudicially loaded questions as to what things are like in Albania are very indicative of a case that was decided before that client ever hit the witness stand. He asks him whether certain questions. He doesn't want to allow him to testify as to what he's learned about what's going on in Albania during the present time, but he asks him questions as to whether things are historically accurate in order to try to refute his testimony. The issue of immigration conduct of immigration judges in the context of these hearings is becoming more and more a matter of concern. I think that particularly with the changes in the way that these cases are reviewed at the Board of Immigration Appeals, it's incumbent upon all of us who are involved in this kind of litigation to ensure that these clients who are testifying most of the time in a foreign language, in a foreign culture, are ensured that their hearings are fair. And I don't think that in this case the hearing was fair. And for these reasons, we request that you grant our application for relief. And I believe all you're allowed to do is remand these cases right now for reconsideration. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Scudo?
May it please the court, my name is Chad Boudreau and I represent the Attorney General of the United States. There are two primary issues before the court in this case today. The first is whether substantial evidence supports the board's finding that petitioner has not met his burden to establish eligibility for asylum. And second, whether or not the immigration judge's conduct at the deportation proceedings amounted to a violation of constitutional due process. With respect to the first issue, I would submit to the court that substantial evidence does in fact exist to support the board's finding that petitioner has not met his burden for establishing eligibility for asylum. This court reviews the board's decision on this matter under the substantial evidence standard. Under that standard, the court must uphold the board's determination as long as it is supported by reasonable, substantial, and probative evidence on the record as a whole. As the Supreme Court noted in Elias Zacharias at 502 U.S. 478, to win reversal under this highly deferential standard, the petitioner must not merely show that the evidence supports a contrary conclusion to that of the board, but that the evidence compels such a contrary conclusion. This court...
Forgive me. Here's what happened to Mr. Hassanash. A group of masked men pointed their rifles at his head and threatened to kill him. They burned his car up. His cousin was shot. His brother was imprisoned. And a threatening note is received by the family. Now, wouldn't all of these events together give him a reasonable fear of persecution?
Your Honor, I would say no, and the immigration judge and the board both determined that the evidence...
Would it give you a reasonable fear of persecution?
I'm sorry?
Would it give you a reasonable fear of persecution?
Your Honor, my particular understanding with the facts in this case is that they have to be taken in the context of exactly what was going on in that period of time. And, what we see as offensive here in the United States really doesn't matter when determining what has actually happened in other countries. In this particular case, the judge found that there was no past persecution because the events were not of the type that would give rise to past persecution. There was no arrest, no detention, no persecution, no imprisonment, no beatings, no torture. In the end, he was allowed to go free after approximately 10 minutes, and there was absolutely no physical harm whatsoever. After considering all the evidence, including events involving petitioner's brother and cousin...
Well, his car was burnt on site, I assume. He had to walk wherever he was going when he was let go. Is that right?
That's correct, Judge. Neither the immigration judge nor the board explicitly stated whether or not they found that particular aspect of the claim credible, but it wasn't mentioned in the board's opinion. The gravamen of the claim was that he was approached by 3 to 5 masked men and they threatened his life, and that basically they threatened his life because he believes they thought he was a member of the Democratic Party at the time. But
sounds like DuPage County.
Nonetheless, this is just a threat that was given at the time. He wasn't physically harmed, and importantly, courts have held that threats usually will not compel a finding of past persecution. I cite to the court Lim versus INS at 224 F3rd at 936 out of the Ninth Circuit. As this court noted in the Mitev case, 67 F3rd at 1330, context is everything when determining whether events amount to persecution.
Mr. Boudreaux, you cited several cases for the proposition that the BIA is entitled to give significant weight and deference to the State Department report. How does our decision last week in NEAM alter the outcome in your view?
Your Honor, it's completely irrelevant to this case, and let me tell you why. The testimony elicited by the general conditions of Albania in this case were arrived not just from state reports, but also from the testimony of the witness, where he admitted in his testimony that there was looting and general lawlessness in the area. Also, The particular reason that the state reports were used in this case, or rather the reason that the judge was limiting the testimony, or at least discouraging the testimony to better characterize it, of the petitioner to testifying further about general conditions in Albania is notable. On page 137 of the record, counsel for the petitioner indicated that the testimony was elicited only as a means to establish, quote, the subjective component of his fear. Well, the judge found that he had a genuine fear of persecution, so that's completely irrelevant as to whether or not he was going to testify with respect to the state reports, whether they were correct or not. So to answer your judge's question, it's absolutely irrelevant in this case. With respect to a well-founded fear of persecution, Your Honor mentioned that there are...
Do you normally spend a lot of time in your brief writing up things that you'll then argue are irrelevant?
Well, I would say that the Gramatikov analysis in the brief and the supporting cases that go along with that are relevant to the extent that this court would find that the testimony elicited by petitioner's counsel would have helped support his claim for a well-founded fear of persecution. So the analysis is correct. I would say that it's somewhat of a red herring, and it was mentioned by the Board of Immigration Appeals, so it was briefed on that point. There are several other things that the petitioner mentioned in trying to state his case for a well-founded fear of future persecution. As your court noted, the brother's incarceration. But he presented no evidence regarding the circumstances of his brother's incarceration, and he has presented no reason why that event supports his asylum claim. The limited evidence of this claim is neither specific nor direct as required by the Act. In fact, I would submit that it is vague, speculative, and so insubstantial as to render it completely irrelevant to his claim. The cousin shooting is another factor he mentions, but the shooting of his cousin does not compel a finding that Hasanaj has a well-founded fear of persecution. His cousin was a well-known Democratic Party member and leader, and thus was in a different circumstance than petitioner, who admitted he was just a plain member. He admits this on the record at page 115. Hasanaj also admitted that he never held a position in his party, and there is no compelling evidence that he, as a non-leader in the party, would be singled out in the future on account of his political beliefs. Hasanaj's family members, at least five of whom are Democratic Party members themselves, have not been harmed since he left Albania, and this is notable. They continue to live in the same village without being threatened since the time he left for the United States. This court has held that the absence of such evidence undermines the petitioner's claim of a well-founded fear of persecution, and I'd cite Bott versus Reno for that proposition at 172 F3rd at 982. That leaves the single brief encounter with masked men, but that falls well short of establishing a well-founded fear of persecution. There is simply no specific evidence in the record that he has been threatened since that time, or he will be threatened in the future. I want to touch upon the due process violations, and I would submit to the court that with respect to this issue, there is no violation of petitioner's constitutional right to due process. This court reviews constitutional questions of law de novo, and the Fifth Amendment's due process clause mandates that the deportation hearing be fundamentally fair. This court recently held in Ambadi versus Reno, 233 F3rd at 1061, that to establish a due process violation, an alien must show that he was denied right to counsel, to reasonably present evidence, or to testify. The record is clear that Hasanaj was allowed a reasonable opportunity to fully and fairly present his case. I would note that there were seven hearings in this case spanning over a one-year period. He had a counsel for more than 1 year, and there are over 80 pages of testimony reflecting a merits hearing that lasted more than 2 hours. Also, the indications that the judge acted in a way that hectored and biased the claim is just unfounded. The testimony that the judge elicited was very exacting. He was shedding light on the fact of what he needed in order to analyze the claim. This court has held in Kirkuku that the immigration judge does not violate due process when he limits the extent of some testimony or frequently interrupts the applicant's presentation. And I guess it's somewhat ironic because I actually think this helped the petitioner state the elements that he needed. I see my time is up, Your Honor, if I could finish this point. It actually helped the petitioner in allowing him the means to know what he needed to present. And I would say that the real tragedy, although the immigration judge have total right to do this, is when they don't ask any questions or elicit any testimony, and then at the end they say, you didn't show me X, Y, and Z, and so you didn't support your claim. In the end, and for the foregoing reasons, we would ask that this court deny Hasanaj's petition for relief. Thank you.
Thanks. You got about a minute left.
Just a couple of points for clarification. First, human rights standards are not country-specific. They're universal. Something is a violation of human rights in Albania, it's a violation of the human rights in the United States, England, or any other country. The statement that they're somehow relative according to the country is not correct. It's not necessary for the client to prove that he would be singled out for persecution. That's archaic case law. I think the language that the government used in its brief about his family living in Albania was that it mitigates his claim, not that it undermines his claim. There was only one evidentiary hearing in this case. There were not seven evidentiary hearings. And I would like to finally leave with a quote from Socrates that says that the judge's job is to hear courteously, which you people have done, to answer wisely, to consider soberly, and to decide impartially. I think the judge in the lower court did not do that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. This case will be taken under advisement.